All right, folks, get your finger out and pit your football knowledge against Team OTB to win big. There's €2,500 for the winner of the OTB Final One Standing League on the William Hill app. Guaranteed winner, and it's exclusive to our own league. Just sign up at William Hill Final One Standing. Use the code OFFTHEBALL, that's all one word and all caps, and make sure you sign up before Friday the 15th at 8 o'clock when the new season kicks off. €2,500 to the winner, guaranteed.
Welcome along to Monday Night Football Show. It's Owen and Nathan here in studio with you until 10 o'clock this evening. So we are less than 24 hours away from a massive fixture in the path of Shelburne FC. We are 4 days away from the beginning of the Premier League season. Liverpool kicking things off against Bournemouth on Friday night. So it's a peak football season, Nathan Murphy.
Oh, we're back. We're back, baby.
We never went anywhere.
Football show here every day.
First
from
football
now till eternity.
Of the a busy 9-10 months ahead. It is, of course, a World Cup year, which the Republic of Ireland will be partaking in.
Where in the world will we broadcast our last football show of this season from?
Any pubs in New York, do hit us up. Or it is going to be New York, the final next year, as opposed
it's going to be New Jersey.
It's New Jersey,
But we'll get the train out.
I think, is it the long haul, Johnny, the long haul, who'll put us up?
Yeah, Johnny, get in early. There'll be a lot of demand, so I think Johnny needs to get in early, make those flight bookings early, get in ahead of the posse in New York.
Exactly. We must get on our Airbnb bookings and all of that, because it is signed, sealed and delivered. The Republic of Ireland will certainly be at the World Cup next year. That might actually figure in some of our conversation with regards to the weekend's football. I'm sure plenty of people out there found themselves watching a bit of Southampton versus Wrexham at the weekend. We'll get to that in just a moment. But Crystal Palace, Community Shield Champions 2025, Nathan.
Yeah, I was thinking of Andy Cantwell, who does those brilliant, is it lip syncing we call it, of commentators and co-commentators and their dynamic, and Fletch and Ali McCoist talking about their excitement with being back in the first match of the new season and how many matches they were going to cover over the next 9 months, and that sort of resigned tone by the time they got to the end of that short conversation of, oh yeah, we're not going to have a day off. Oh, we got the Super Cup final between Paris Saint-Germain and Spurs on Wednesday night. There's your midweek football covered for this week after you've got Shelburne tomorrow night. Then you've got the Premier League back on Friday night, Liverpool against Bournemouth, and it's just sort of relentless because there's more matches than ever on TV. So I think every weekend there's now going to be either a Friday night 8 o'clock game or a Saturday night 8 o'clock game. So the first 3 weeks of the season up till the international break, we've got Friday night 8 o'clock games, and then through September it moves to a Saturday night 8 o'clock kickoff.
Okay, right. Every single week.
Every week. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of live football. Yesterday was a nice little taste. It was something that was more enjoyable about a community or charity shield when it matters to one of the sets of supporters. And it really felt like it mattered to Crystal Palace to, yes, we won the FA Cup, we don't win silverware, so actually, why not go and win another one?
It's one of also the great moments is watching a team who've made a whole host of new signings seeing their first outing. And we'll get to that in a moment. But just on Crystal Palace, the Dean Henderson hat, when I saw it coming out at the start of the second half, I thought to myself, doesn't look great. You know, it's kind of one of those that he's clearly just nabbed off somebody else in the backroom team. Little did I know it would be the apparatus for the most iconic Community Shield celebration in history.
You liked it?
Ah, fantastic. If you've got a prop and you use a prop for a celebration, it gets extra marks.
What sort of hat would you like him to have? I wonder, because this is sort of your traditional, like it's a real throwback of, I've just noticed that maybe the sun is going to be in my eyes. Has anyone got a hat? No, nobody's got a hat. Oh, the kit man has one that he wore 10 years ago. Let's just throw that one on. Rather than something very slick and designed and actually a sort of advertisement for the club.
Yeah, he's much like myself, doesn't really have a head for hats, quite clearly, or else maybe it was just the wrong size hat that he needed at that particular juncture. But it was also, if he did it at the end of the penalty shootout, I was kind of thinking to myself, fair enough. But the fact that he did it two penalties in, and the fact that there was a little bit of a hairy moment before the fifth penalty for Crystal Palace as well, where you thought to yourself, geez, this might not actually go their way. Then the celebration would have been hilarious in hindsight.
So did you think it was somewhat contrived of, okay, I've done my thing. Yeah. We're a couple of penalties in. I've contributed. So I'm going to have my little celebration just in case we screw this up. Or has happened when Devenny scores the winner. He gets to be the one who properly celebrates the victory.
Yeah, exactly. Give Devenny his moment. Somebody who will be watching in an international context, representing the North for many, many years.
I was just making this point that, it's gone quiet around a United Ireland football team. You look at the talent that is starting to come through for Northern Ireland over the next few years. And I think maybe we need to spark it up over the next few weeks. You know, we're okay for Euro 2028 because the Republic of Ireland are in there. Unfortunately, now Northern Ireland are going to have to try and qualify. But I think post Euro 28, we need to get on board with this.
Yeah.
There's going to be an even enough split.
Conor Bradley is not on an island here. There is...
Charles.
Yeah. There's a tranche of young footballers representing Northern Ireland who are going to be very, very impressive indeed. But the balls for that penalty, is there some suggestion that maybe he might get farmed out on loan this season? I know he was on the bench a good bit last year for them, so...
It's sort of hard to tell what's going to happen with Palace between now and the end of the transfer window. You'd love if that team could stay together because so many of the teams around them have lost all of their talent and there's still the strong possibility that Mark Gahey leaves potentially to Liverpool. Certainly the way Steve Parrish was talking yesterday, it's either sign a new contract or we're going to have to sell. And like the price they're talking about is anywhere between 35 and 50 million. So with a year left in his contract, it makes sense. Ebrey Jeze has been linked consistently with Arsenal. But is that dependent on Mikel Arteta getting his way and being able to keep Gabriel Martinelli and add Eze as well? It seems as though Arsenal are saying, well, it's one or the other. If you sell Martinelli, get that money in, maybe we can sign Eze. Adam Wharton seems to be somewhere on a list for Manchester United and several clubs, and how could he not be? He's just, you know, watching them again, technically, that position in the middle of midfield, you'd have to think most top clubs are going to be looking at him. So if they come through the transfer window and somehow are to maintain all three of them, or even just lose Gahey and keep Wharton and Eze, with what's happened at the likes of Brentford and Bournemouth, you'd have to think there's a real chance of Palace kicking on next season. And maybe then there's not much game time for Devenny, but if they were to lose one or two of them, suddenly he probably finds himself front and centre.
Yeah, it was confirmed today as well by Cass that they will be playing Conference League football this season as opposed to Europa League. Just one other thing on Henderson before we move off Palace. You saw the bottle that had been circulated. I was under the impression that the instructions were a bit more detailed rather than just left, right. So it was Konate left, Robertson left, Salah right, etc. And it was left or right for all of them except for Curtis Jones where it said wait. Is that a mark of honour for Curtis Jones, or is it much the opposite?
Or that he hadn't taken enough penalties, that they didn't have enough research. You saw what had happened in the Euros final with Hannah Hampton, who managed to get the bottle and flung it into the crowd for the Spanish goalkeeper. And I presume that's why... Now, like, it's not that much of a disguise that he had it under the towel so that, Liverpool wouldn't be able to spot that here's where he was hiding it. I don't understand why Alisson didn't just walk over while he was saving a penalty and off you go.
I mean, that might be the new norm after what Hampton did. Gueye going to Liverpool potentially, is there just a little sign from Liverpool's performance yesterday afternoon that bolstering that defence is a really, really important thing if they're going to defend this title?
Well, they've lost Jarrell Kwanzaa, so they need an extra body. And maybe that's why, you know, Nathan Collins' name has been bandied about over the last couple of weeks as well. They also need to future-proof themselves in the way that they have an attack for... You know, eventually the end is going to come for Virgil van Dijk. They're now in a position that even if speculation comes up around Salah, you know, at the end of next season, you'd imagine Liverpool would be quite comfortable with what they have ready to go to replace Mo Salah, where that's not the case defensively. Now, van Dijk didn't have a good game yesterday, was the other thing. It felt a little bit like the last year of Slot's reign of the last few months where they were just wide open every time they lost the ball.
Klopp's reign.
Klopp's reign, yeah. Every time. That even in the first half when Liverpool were the better team, that they lost the ball in midfield, it just felt like one ball over the top and Liverpool were going to be in massive trouble. But they were missing Gravenberch, McAllister, even Endo if they were stuck. Like, I don't think Curtis Jones and Dominic Szoboszlai is a midfield that gives you any protection at all. It felt like the things they had learned last year defensively that they'd improved on were out the window yesterday without McAllister or Gravenberch. And it felt, you could see instantly, I think, a different style of play from Liverpool. Like, so much of it was on the left-hand side where you had Gakpo, Wirtz, Szoboszlai coming over there, Kerkez, Ekitiki was coming into that side as well. And then you have acres of space over in the far side of the pitch for Salah and Frimpong if they can ping the ball over to them, and then they're trying to isolate the fullbacks. So is that something that we're going to see a lot more of in the absence of Alexander-Arnold? I think looking at Frimpong yesterday, it does feel he's a far more traditional fullback. He's not the guy pinging 50, 60 yard balls forward. He's making the type of runs, you know, most fullbacks make. So I do wonder if Liverpool are going to play maybe a lot more advanced up the pitch. Not as much time for Konate and Van Dijk on the ball. And how that then develops. And is that going to take a bedding in period? Like,
yeah.
It feels like for teams that sit deep, you're going to need a bit of patience. You're going to need someone like Ekitike to do what he did yesterday and be absolutely clinical. But yeah, go back to your point on the centre backs. I think they'll definitely sign somebody because they can't go into the season hoping that maybe, you know, Gravenberch will slot in at centre back if somebody gets injured, or Andy Robertson will slot in at centre back if something was wrong with Van Dijk.
And there is going to be antennas pricked around after every poor performance from Virgil van Dijk this season, because he's a 34-year-old centre back, and naturally the conversation will be, you know, if he loses a bit of form, can he recover it? However, we have been here with Van Dijk at times in the past, and he has recovered. There will come a time when that's going to stop, but I'm not saying that it's going to be this season where that eventually happens. But particularly when you listen to Van Dijk after the game, he was talking about, you know, we press as a team, we defend as a team. You could say, if you weren't aware of the man that Van Dijk is, it's maybe absolving himself of a little bit of blame, but there were two big screw-ups from him. But there probably is a lot of truth in that, given what you outlined there, the midfield in front of him. There probably isn't a whole heap of solidity about that Liverpool 11 compared to the way it's going to look over the next few weeks. And as a result of that, the centre-backs are probably going to look a bit better when Gravenberch does come back. Like, he is going to be out this Friday, and their lineup for this Friday night is going to be
very interesting. Yeah, he's suspended for Friday. You'd assume McAllister comes back in and maybe just plays that little bit deeper. Now, he doesn't have the athleticism of Gravenberch. He can't cover the ground the way that Gravenberch can. Like, Gueye does look like a perfect fit. You look at the quality of his passing yesterday. Again, we're probably thinking more on the defensive side, but Arne Slot's probably thinking more on what he can do in possession. And we saw yesterday three or four times his ability to ping the ball, which is what Van Dijk does so well to Salah consistently, that when Liverpool are humming, he can play that 60, 70-yard crossfield ball. And Gueye feels like he has that in his locker.
He didn't get injured, though, did he?
Like, there was a bit of a knock. Like,
does that put you off signing somebody?
That was the slight thing at the end of, was Arne Slot the one with his head in his hands when Mark Gueye gets injured? Yeah, if there's a constant injury issue with a player, you'd have to think it's potentially a problem. Like, the Van Dijk thing is, I always find it fascinating, because he's held in such high esteem by everybody, and this sense that he's almost flawless, that every time he makes any mistake, it's, oh, wow. Yeah. He actually makes, you know, a few mistakes. Like, across the season, he, you know, he gets caught out the odd time. You think back to, you know, Quevin Kelleher having to bail him out a couple of times at the end of last season. And I don't think he's one who, you know, publicly takes that criticism too well. I don't think he goes hands up, had a bad day.
Okay.
I've rarely seen Van Dijk put his hands up and go, that one's on me, guys. It's a systems failure than anything.
Liverpool would be mad to change the starting midfield from last year.
They are going to change the starting midfield because Wirtz is going to play in midfield.
Does Wirtz not have to maybe work his way into that midfield? Can Wirtz not play in a different position, like, say, that left forward position that seems up for grabs, where Gakpo started yesterday? Like, it was the strongest part of their whole team last year, or maybe the most improved part of their whole team, was Gravenberch, Szoboszlai, McAllister. And the delicate nature of trying to balance a midfield, is it not a little bit unwise to just be throwing that out immediately? And look, Wirtz is an amazing player, don't get me wrong, but that balance is so hard to find.
That's what he's doing, isn't it? Like, he's throwing this out. He's, even though they won the league, he's saying, we're going to try and do something different. That's certainly what it looks like from the signing of Wirtz. I have to say Wirtz more than Wirtz.
Yeah.
Wirtz comes easier.
Yeah.
But I think he's going with the Wirtz.
Well, as long as you're getting it right as our chief commentator, that's all that matters.
I'll
go with comfort.
I started with Wirtz, but I'm rolling too easily back to a Wirtz. So we go with a Wirtz where possible.
Okay.
I think all the signs are that he's going to play in a sort of free role, but as one of the three. So
at eight, ten,
there will still be as a 10. So then how does that shift things behind? Is it two out of Gravenberch, McAllister and Szoboszlai, who played really well yesterday, but is he, you'd have to think he's the more likely fall guy if there's one of the three to miss out, because like McAllister is, you know, his range of passing is top class. He got better and better as the season went on last year. Okay, maybe they're analysing this from the amount of games that they're playing, the amount of international games that they're playing we didn't have enough with Elliot and Jones and Endo. And remember, he was bringing Endo on for, you know, he rarely got on list, was for 6-7 minutes at the end, that we need to have proper rotation. Again, you could look at what's the need for Alexander Isak. aside from what we're getting, the best striker in the Premier League that's not Erling Haaland. So if the opportunity is there, why not take it? But they may well feel, well, if we're always going to play with a number nine and the amount of games we're going to have, Katinka is not going to be able to play in all of them. And maybe he's moved away from what they did last year, which was sort of the false nine with you know, Luis Diaz as the false nine, Gakpo on the left-hand side, or they could rotate sometimes. That actually we want an out-and-out, a guy who's, if Virts is going to play in that number 10 role, suddenly we want a guy in front of him who's going to play on the shoulder of the centre-back all of the time and not drop as deep. So I think you're right. I think you could say it's unwise to change that midfield three that stunned everybody last season by all getting to a level that nobody quite expected them to get to. But that's what he's doing. Like, that's this overhaul for Liverpool. And that's where the question mark arises for Liverpool. Yes, they're signing better players than they had last season. But how long is it going to take all of that to work? How long is it going to take for the buy-in to the system? What does it mean? Again, going back to how they play Justin, it's a very small sample size.
And an unimportant game.
What does it mean for Salah? Is Salah having far less touches, but does that matter? Because actually when he's getting it, he's more isolated and more one-on-one with the opposition full back, and you know, Frimpong is up supporting them and they're getting an overlap there in the way that maybe they always didn't last season. But is he going to be happy with that? Like, I think it was 10 touches in the first half yesterday. And that may be part of the plan is, well, you know, we're going to play a lot of the game on one side of the pitch so that there's a lot of space for Salah on the other side. But is he happy that Virts is the main man? Like, everything went through Virts yesterday, which was really promising from a Liverpool point of view. And again, I think that's small sample size. One of the things that I felt yesterday was Liverpool played far higher up the pitch than they generally do. Last season, they always started again with Van Dijk and Konaté. Every time they're in a bit of trouble in midfield, go back there. Whereas now it felt that actually Virts is so good on the ball and so comfortable taking possession anywhere that they're playing a little bit further up the pitch. And it does look as though he's going to have a free role, and maybe rightly, with the amount of money they've spent on him, to do whatever the hell he wants.
It's going to be mad that actually the summer of 2025 is a far more seismic summer for Liverpool Football Club than the summer where Klopp was replaced by Arne Slot. And maybe when the tale is told of the Slot era, and Liverpool fans will hope it's 5 years from now, when, or even longer, it'll actually, you'll have to go back and think about the massive differences between year one of Slot and year two of Slot. So,
and the other bit, Owen, that we almost have to check ourselves on, I think, consistently over the season, is we just have no idea of what the impact of Diogo Jota's death is going to be on that group, and particularly the players who've been with him over the last 3 or 4 years, and the sudden shock of his death, and trying to cope with that, and there'll be moments maybe such as Friday night when I think they're going to have the main tributes ahead of the game against Bournemouth, and there'll be another minute silence, and there'll be various tributes in the hour leading up to the game, and you know, I'm sure the atmosphere and the emotion of the occasion is going to be somewhat overwhelming in ways, but Liverpool are very good at taking that emotion and using it to their advantage on the pitch. But how does that play out across the season when, you know, you're going to grounds where he'll have scored important goals, he'll have certain memories and certain players. And I don't think we've any way of knowing how that impacts on, you know, Virgil van Dijk, who's, I'm sure, taken a huge amount of that on his shoulders over the last couple of months. And, you know, football is so ruthless. People aren't going to offer it up as an excuse if they start losing games. It'll come back to, well, why did he change the system? Whereas I think there almost is a bit of every few weeks we have to go, this unprecedented situation has happened for this group, and maybe it is having some sort of an impact.
Definitely. You mentioned at the top the idea that we're going to get into a new, more fulsome rhythm with the Premier League season this year. I think we kind of got into that habit kind of out of reflex on Saturday, where I think a lot of people ended up watching this Southampton versus Wrexham game. Hugely entertaining. Big Irish angle on all of this. And you might have made the case beforehand that you could foresee James McLean having a role, you could foresee Gavin Bazunu playing a part, which they both did in varying degrees of success. In the end, Ryan Manning was the Irish superhero in this.
Scored one, set up one, and a brilliant free kick.
Yeah.
It was, what, 30 yards out?
About that.
I didn't know you had this in your locker, Ryan Manning. And suddenly, on a weekend when we learned that Robbie Brady is in all likelihood going to miss the qualifiers next month because he picked up a seemingly pretty bad calf injury in a preseason friendly against Manchester City, and he's our go-to guy for a set-piece specialist, that maybe Ryan Manning is literally just going to slot in. I think Ryan Manning would have played anyways in September, maybe in a slightly more advanced position. Yeah, God, there's a lot. The way that they cover the Championship League One, where every single game is on all of the time, and there's just a relentless drama with, it feels like, constant last minute winners and mad stuff happening all of the time. Yeah, this was, I only saw the latter stages, which again was ideal, where you get all the drama. Like, Wrexham are going to be a story, maybe the biggest story. Like, the fact that Wrexham and Birmingham are coming up and are the focus of these documentaries and are very much of interest, I think, to your neutral supporter, more so than a lot of the, even the teams, the better teams. Like, I'm not sure whether Wrexham are going to come second or second last. I'm sort of assuming they're going to come second because they'll just keep on investing. But maybe, you know, maybe there's a ceiling to what they can do with the rate of progress that they've had over the last couple of years. And this is a season where, you know, is that a better storyline for Wrexham? It's a season of struggling. They survive on the last day.
Yeah. What does FX actually want out of this season? Are you rooting for them?
I don't know. No, which probably means no.
Yeah, yeah.
I was rooting for them, strangely, when they were further down. But now, I think they've just got to stand on their own 2 feet and prove that they deserve anything else. If they want to get promoted, go and be in an incredibly difficult league, one of the better teams. Like, it'd be brilliant to see James McLean sort of leading them. I mean, just signed a new contract as well over the weekend, back to the Premier League and get another crack at the Premier League, having, you know, taken a step down in terms of football for his career, but obviously not in terms of probably the financial side of it, to become this figurehead for Wrexham. But no, I don't think anyone's really with the fairy tale, certainly in this part of the world. Maybe outside of those of us who are watching and consuming a lot of English football, you're looking at this underdog story and its natural conclusion is that they end up in the Premier League at some stage. Mm-hmm. I don't quite know if it's now.
No, I think it is an inevitability at this point. And I think that there's going to be a backlash to the ownerships of Birmingham City and of Wrexham if it hasn't already happened. I just think that's going to grow legs. And maybe there's nothing wrong with that. I think I was like delighted that, delighted may be a strong word. I was very pleased that Southampton managed to turn that game around on Saturday. And I'm not sure, is it entirely to do with the Irish contingent, of which there is more at Southampton, or is it actually just to do with the fact that I want to see this Wrexham thing maybe slow down a little bit?
Yeah, I think the Irish contingent probably plays.
Bazunu is very good. Well, makes a massive save before Southampton.
Yeah, and it's great because Gavin's obviously had a lot of injuries as well, and his loan move was cut short, and we were sort of wondering what would happen with Aaron Ramsdale, who's ended up going to Newcastle, as to where Gavin Bazunu would fit in. It just feels like we're in this never-ending circle of he'll get a good year in the Championship. Do they get promoted? Is next year the year he finally gets a full season as a Premier League goalkeeper to prove what he is? But there's no doubt he's probably going to end up being the best goalkeeper in the Championship again next year. If you were to be forced into a decision between it's either Wrexham or Birmingham going to win the Championship, where are you?
Wrexham, probably. Complete reflex. I need to watch the Birmingham documentary. And I'm not sure that make me like the idea of Tom Brady being involved in this football club or dislike it quite heavily.
Yeah, the clips probably don't reflect particularly well on him. Like, there is, and maybe, you know, maybe they do just have better producers involved with the Wrexham story, where they were able to go in at a very low level and sort of bring everyone along with them, where there's a little bit of Tom Brady sense looking around going, why can't we just have like a Super League where we're in that and we don't have to do all this sort of hard work stuff? Why can't we just play Manchester United and Liverpool every week?
Yeah. Well, at least he's been kind of like a bit of a character in that documentary by the sounds of things. So there's a bit of an authenticity about it. Chidozie Akpeni was back on the pitch on Friday night for Ipswich, played 68 minutes.
First time in 9 months for Chidozie Akpeni. He's obviously had a horrible time of it with injury. So, yeah, mixed news because we're really getting into that period now where the World Cup qualifiers are hurtling down the tracks. We're less than a month away. There's only 3 rounds of Premier League games before those fixtures come up. So Chidozie Akpeni, like I felt that right-hand wing position is so important to the way Hal Grimson sets up. Like, that's always their out ball. And a few different people have put their hands up for it. But I think if Akpeni gets back and he gets to play these 3-4 games, he'll be the starting player in that position on the right-hand side. And what he was saying coming into preseason was that he intended to be the fittest player in that squad, in that Ipswich squad. And with his work ethic, you'd expect he'll be just that. So hopefully he gets through this run of games and can come in fully fit, because it seems Will Smallbone might be a bit of a doubt. is a calf injury. Some talk as well that he might end up leaving Southampton. Now, more than likely, I think, for another Championship club. But yeah, the squad's going to be announced in a couple of weeks' time. So any of these guys, we can get fit, stay fit, and get a good run of games into their legs. Like Casey McAteer was on the bench for Leicester at the weekend, came on for the last few minutes. So I'd have Ogbene ahead of him in all likelihood, if Ogbene can stay fit.
Of course, the Championship is not the division that we're most interested in when it comes to English football. It is, of course, League One. Mm. So a sensational game on Saturday at Oakwell between Barnsley and Burton. Of course, people would have been paying close attention to this as well. Burton 2-0 up after 35 minutes at Barnsley. Caelan Vickers scores in the 55th minute to bring one back for Barnsley. Then they equalise in the 63rd minute. Davis Kaylor Dunn with the goal to equalise. And then in the 93rd minute, David McGoldrick steps up to win the game for Barnsley against Burton. What a story.
David McGoldrick. What age you got in David McGoldrick?
36?
37. Ooh. 37, David McGoldrick. Of course, Conor Howerton's Barnsley.
Yep.
We should point out, who's a few years younger than David McGoldrick, but is managing Barnsley. So that goal for David McGoldrick, remarkable. 20th consecutive season that he has scored a league goal. He made his debut for Notts County in January 2004. And Barnsley, the 11th different team he scored for in one of England's top four divisions.
Some going.
It is an insane longevity for David McGoldrick, who, funny, we're chatting out in the office about David McGoldrick, and if we were to do our usual, which maybe we'll end up doing another tiebreak at some stage, of how many caps? David McGoldrick is one of those. You go, he probably has about 35 caps, maybe 8 or 9 goals. I sort of have, in my head, he has a John Walters-style Irish career, yeah, almost. No, 14 caps for David McGoldrick, 1 goal against Switzerland.
That is extraordinary, isn't it?
He obviously retired, but he would have been, was he late 20s, early? No, he would have been early 30s when he decided to step away when Stephen Kenny came in to concentrate in his club game, which has clearly paid dividends because he's, you know, still playing at a reasonable level in League One. Yeah, it was sort of there for the Mick McCarthy era, the latter stages of the Martin O'Neill era, at a time when it's just sort of coincided with that moment when we stopped scoring goals.
Yeah, but it also seemed, like, again, just speaking kind of into this like vague area of memory, that Robbie Keane steps away, David McGoldrick is still playing Premier League football and is absolutely there to be a more than adequate striker for a team with the Republic of Ireland's capabilities. But obviously that wasn't the case, or maybe that was just like a flitter of a few months.
No, because I guess Robbie was going by Euro 2016.
Yeah.
So, you know, Darren Murphy was our main developer, sort of late developer around Euro 2016 time. And then Dave McGoldrick comes in just after that. It's at the period where, you know, Sheffield United are getting a strong Irish contingent, so we're getting interested there. But it was also a period of just real flatness around the international team and never quite been sure what his level was. And listen, the level he's scoring at now is League One. It's more just a testament, I think, to his professionalism and how well he's looked after himself. And again, maybe making the right decision for himself 4 or 5 years ago. I think it was one of the real blows for Stephen Kenny at the time that he didn't hang around, because he had this really good crop of young forwards coming through who obviously now we're seeing the fruits of that, with, you know, Troy Parrott scoring again over the weekend. He's scoring in Europe. Evan Ferguson, Adam Ida, who seems front and centre of everything that's happening at Celtic at the moment. You know, he's getting game time, but I'm not sure the supporters are particularly pleased with the amount of game time he's getting. Brendan Rodgers saying, I need some sort of backup for Adam Ida. But, you know, what an asset Dave McGoldrick could have been maybe in those few years to be around the squad and help those guys along and maybe shoulder some of the burden during those difficult periods under Stephen Kenny.
One other thing from English football that we wanted to discuss, it's off the pitch transfer window in its kind of last few weeks. Manchester City and their wingers are all saying goodbye.
Yeah, City are the most difficult team to predict. I can't wait. This is why I can't wait for this season. I'm just not sure what's going to happen with our, like, I'm commentating on Manchester United Arsenal on Sunday.
It's a great, great Sunday fixture.
Like, we're going to read way too much into that. Yeah. Way too much into that if there's a winner and there's a loser as to, whoa, like if Manchester United win, Amorim has worked wonders over the summer. He's going to get rid of all the guys he doesn't want to. They've signed brilliantly. Whereas if they lose, suddenly, has anything actually changed at Old Trafford? And likewise with Arsenal. the amount we're going to be able to read into that. But with City, I'm totally on the fence as to what's going to happen. Like, surely there's a muscle memory there with so many of this squad as to just winning, knowing how to win 30 games in a season and get to sort of 90 points. But these couple of moves with Jack Grealish and Savinho both leaving, so Grealish gone to Everton, Savinho, it seems, going to Spurs, sums up probably the big problem for Guardiola over the last few years, is that with the exception of Erling Haaland, what attacking player has got better at Manchester City over the last 3 or 4 years? Like, Phil Foden had that one season where it looked as though, you know, he might not just be the best player in the Premier League, or he might go on to be one of the best players in the world. And for various reasons, nothing really happened for him last season. Out on the left-hand side, like Jeremy Doku, Savinho, Grealish, you could throw any of them on, and they all seemed to do the same thing. Like, there was a threat without any real end product. I would have almost had Savinho as the better of the three, but Doku seemed to be the chosen one. Like, January, they bring in Omar Marmoush, who, you know, scored a couple of sensational goals, but didn't really feel like he was, certainly didn't feel like he was a step up in Julian Alvarez, even though they're trying to ask him to do something similar. Now, it's again, we're talking on 3 or 4 months and a lot of games that didn't particularly matter for Manchester City when Marmoush was there. So maybe if he comes in at the start of the year and they know exactly what they're trying to do. But it does mean when you're looking at someone like Ryan Cherki, who comes in with a massive reputation again, incredibly skillful, has got all the tricks, all the flicks, you're kind of going, well, is he going to be allowed to do that at this Manchester City side under Pep Guardiola? It's a mad thing to be saying, considering how many goals they generally score and how brilliant they are going forward. But, you know, you're still, it feels, relying on Bernardo Silva to come up and, you know, be a solid sort of 8, 9 out of 10 every game. De Bruyne has gone.
Rodri's got a setback.
Going to be out until at least the international break. And then again, that sort of injury, you're probably going to have a few setbacks over the course of the season. So they're probably going to have to mind him for a little while. So it's really strange time. Like, are they going to go now that they've signed Aitnori and play Aitnori at left back and move Gvardiol in as a centre back and go with more traditional? So is Pep going to be the one who goes back more traditional like Liverpool with the full backs and not inverting as much as they were? Or did they just do that on the right hand side if Aitnori is a more traditional left hand sided player? So yeah, really interesting what's happening. And yeah, Savinho, I would have thought maybe Grealish was a better fit for Spurs than Savinho, but like, geez, that's a real coup for Everton.
Yeah, it certainly is. Maybe a bit more of a step down than we expected from Jack Grealish at this stage in his career. What we're going to do is we'll take a quick break, and there's loads of domestic stories to get stuck into after these. We've kind of boxed off a lot of the Premier League and English talking points over the first part. Tomorrow night, though, Nathan, is the big story domestically. Shelburne against Rijeka, 2-1 up after the first leg last week in Croatia. And people will realise this is the Europa League. So if they get through this tie, they will be guaranteed at the very least league phase football in the Conference League this season, which involves a €3.8 million check from UEFA, amongst other very likely future earnings.
Yeah, it's not on TV, but we are going to have full live commentary here on Off the Ball tomorrow night from Talca Park. Vinnie Perth and Jonathan Higgins are going to be there. And this is what Shamrock Rovers did last season. This is the round that they managed to win. So then you go and you get a free hit in terms of qualifying for the Europa League. So considering the position that Shelburne have found themselves in over the past few weeks after Damien Duff's departure, and we all wondered whether it came at the worst possible time, Joey O'Brien's done an incredible job just to settle things down. And that was a remarkable result last week in Croatia. Now, they were missing a couple of players. There's a guy, Tony Fruk, who's sort of their main creative player, who's been in the Croatia squad recently, who's going to come back. And maybe that extra bit of quality lets the Croatian side show what they're all about. But they're coming to Talca Park. Again, massive boost for Shelburne. They thought they were going to have to play this in Tala, but the Croatian side aren't allowed to bring any travelling supporters, so they're going to be able to play this. It'll be a full Shelburne support. And they played really well last week. Like, again, just their set pieces have been exceptional the whole way through this European run. You'll remember the one they had disallowed up in Linfield. They took a short corner. Again, a couple of really good set pieces last week. And like, they changed the team last week. Like, it seems whoever he brings in, they've made some really good signings over the window, so they've got a bit of strength and depth. So even when they're, you know, playing at the weekend, they can make changes. I think it was 6-7 changes he made for the draw with Bowles on Saturday evening. And it doesn't feel like you're taking a huge amount out of the side. So I think we're looking at a position for Shelburne where I wonder if the draw eased a bit of the pressure on them last week. So if they were to fail to win tomorrow, they're playing either Linfield again, who they've already beaten and beat comfortably, or they're going to play a team from the Faroe Islands.
Okay.
For a place in the Conference League, and actually going, all right, I don't want to say it was a free hit, but you know, we can feel quite confident that even if we don't get through this, that we should have enough to beat either of those sides.
And if they win tomorrow night?
If they win, they're playing either Pauk or Wolfsberger from Austria. Mm-hmm. Wolfsberger?
Wolfsberger, I'd say.
Wolfsberger, Wolfsberger.
Yeah.
Not Wolfsburg.
No, I've made that mistake in the past.
So they were scoreless after the first leg. So that'd be incredibly tough for them. But I think with the 2-1 lead, obviously there's no away goals anymore. You know, I think you'd be reasonably confident that Shelburne can get the job done. And then you mentioned, like, the starter money is heading towards 4 million. And we saw last year with Shamrock Rovers, who were more than able to hold their own when it came to the Conference League and get to the playoffs, and very unfortunate not to get through to the last 16 of the Conference League. Like, Shelburne should be in a similar position where you'll have games that are winnable. And suddenly then you're able to transform the club for not just this season, but for the coming seasons, and try and focus on getting back in next season, because that's obviously the big challenge for Shelburne right now. You know, they've got Pats in the Cup next weekend. The Cup is huge for Shelburne, for all the teams, because it gets you into the Europa League qualifiers for next season. So, yeah, it's a really exciting time, I think, for Shells again, who must have been a little bit concerned when Duff left that it might just all fall a little bit flat. And then Thursday night, we've got Shamrock Rovers, who were beaten over in Kosovo by Balkany. I always wondered then, was there the opposite effect on them when they saw the draw? So they're going to be playing a team from Portugal, from the Azores, who finished fifth in the Portuguese, Santa Clara, who are almost certainly going to go through. Like, one of the toughest draws they could have gotten in the playoff, was there a little bit in the back of their minds of, sort of thought we could beat anybody, but maybe this is the toughest possible opposition they could get.
Right, so you'd almost say Shelburne the most likely team to be flying
right now, whereas I think a couple of weeks ago you would have thought Rovers. Shamrock Rovers.
You were at the Rovers game yesterday. They were at AM&DC Park. Thrilling nil-all draw?
This was maybe the best nil-nil.
Yeah.
Certainly top five nil-nil draws I've ever seen. Atmosphere was supercharged. You know, the news came through over the weekend that Ollie Horgan was stepping away as Galway United assistant manager. I think there was a lot of emotion involved in that, I'm sure, from the fans, but also for the players on the pitch. Shamrock Rovers have one eye on Europe. They make a lot of changes. But Galway went back to what they do best, which was ultra physical, know exactly what they're about, allowed Shamrock Rovers have possession at times. I think Rovers ended up with sort of 76, 77% possession and didn't have a shot on target. And Ed McGuinty was man of the match, made a string of brilliant saves. But just, I watched it pitch level right down, right beside the pitch, and I was watching some of the Shamrock Rovers players warm up. Like Dylan Watts was warming up at one stage. I'm thinking, you don't want to go, you don't want to be going out there.
Yeah.
This is no place for a technical player like you. You just want your biggest, most physical men out there standing up to this. And there was nothing, I wouldn't have said there was anything particularly dirty about it. Just a side who almost know their limitations, but know what they're good about. And Galway have been on a really bad run, particularly obviously with the departure of Moses Dyer didn't help things, and they get quite a bit of stick about their style of play. I always really like watching them because they know what they're about. When they need to get the ball down and play a bit of football, they can do that. But Jesus, they're just so physical. I haven't seen a team be that physically commanding in a long, long time, and should have won the game. I think Galway United, or Shamrock Rovers, would be just delighted to get their trips to Galway done for the season and forget about them for a little while. And brilliant atmosphere down at Eamon DC Park as well. So, yeah, a few scoreless draws in the league over the course of the weekend, but another good weekend for Shamrock Rovers because nobody's capitalised in any way.
No, 10 points clear at the top of the table. They're on 53. Bohemians on 43 points at this stage. You do have Derry and Drogheda on 42 as well, just behind Bowes, which Shells on 39 and St. Pat's on 38. So this is going to become a storyline about European places at the end of the season. Rovers will have this wrapped up a few weeks before the end of the year, you'd imagine.
Yeah, because like Pat's beat Sligo yesterday. There was a mad call in that where Patrick McLean gets sent off. It's already been
what
overturned. It was just looked like more coming together than anything with Mason Melia, but there was definitely a covering defender and straight red card. Was never a red card, and again instantly overturned. But you know, Sligo Rovers aren't have gone on a great run that's got them clear of Cork City in the fight for survival. They may still end up in a playoff, but just gives St. Patrick's Athletic a massive advantage. And Pats actually have had two really good wins now because they've beaten Sligo and Waterford in between the European games. We saw on Thursday night, we were out in Tala for, you know, the game against Besiktas where they were just totally outclassed. You know, we're never in the game. Probably a little bit naive, it felt like, in terms of the way they set up. Maybe a bit surprised, I think, as we all were, by just how good Besiktas were, particularly the couple of Portuguese lads that they had in midfield, just absolutely ran the show. But, like, Pats are scrapping for Europe. Shells are scrapping for Europe. And it doesn't feel like Drogheda are going anywhere. Like, you get the sense Drogheda are going to hang in there till the very end. But Derry have made a couple of really good signings. That saw them play last week out in Tala against Shamrock Rovers, and they were very, very good. They signed a couple of players from lower leagues in England at left back and up front, and, you know, they looked like they brought something different to Derry. So I don't know how you could predict which of those sort of four or five teams are going to end up finishing second and third.
No. In terms of this season, is it a bit of a come down compared to the insanity of the title race last year?
Like last year was the perfect storm. I just always feel it was a bit like Drive to Survive. And, you know, the year everybody falls back in love with Formula One, you get this insane finale that I don't even know if it's still been fully sorted out as to what exactly happened. That you had this year where everybody was bought into the Damien Duff storyline. Everybody was going to games. Everything was sold out. And then you get it all going down to the final 10 minutes of the year, and you have characters that people had come to know and learn about and were invested in. The chances of getting that again were always going to be slim, and the likelihood always was the Shamrock Rovers were going to bounce back. I'm still surprised how good Shamrock Rovers have been this season and how they've managed to turn it around over the last 12 months. This time last year, I thought Stephen Bradley had brought them as far as he could. I thought that the makeup of the team and the way that they'd gone about building that team, they couldn't replicate it, that, you know, players weren't coming through from the academy, even though they had the best academy. They've sorted that. So, you know, they signed in Michael Noonan, but they're giving kids a chance. Austin Voon is getting opportunities. Keane Barrett's been coming in and playing games. Corey O'Sullivan's been exceptional on the left-hand side of the fence. You know, could they buy the best players from other teams to keep them going? They've managed to do that. Like, they brought in Conor Malley from Sligo, who's made a big difference already over the last couple of games. And then what about the guys who were coming back? Could they make the right signings there? And it seems, you know, with Aaron McInniff returning, you know, Danny Mandreou staying put, they've been able to do that as well. And if anything, they're better than ever. They've got a level of depth that I don't think we've ever seen in the league. So maybe it was always natural that they were going to win. But like that fight for second, I know it's not a title race, but that scrap for second and third place is probably going to go right down to the wire as well. Like, I think you got Drogheda against Bolton the last night of the season up in Drogheda, so that could be, you know, one of them takes a place. But I find this part of the season quite frustrating because it's just very stop-start. And, you know, you have big games taking place on a sort of Saturday evening or Sunday evening. It feels like they get a little bit lost. You get into such good routine in the first 3 or 4 months of Friday night, everybody's playing. And I don't know what the answer is when you have European games on and a Thursday night, you know. You probably need to have the bye weeks maybe a little bit later now rather than earlier in the European campaign because teams are progressing further.
And what about the longer season? Like that Stephen Bradley is very much in favour of.
Yeah, I think definitely a longer season, but you probably end up having to start the season a little bit earlier. So you start. And Stephen Bradley's thinking about it more, I think, from what happened to them in Europe last season as much as anything, that, you know, they're having to play massive games in the league. You know, they went to Stamford Bridge and they hadn't played a competitive league game for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And then they're having to play against Molde and the season hasn't started up. I think with, as far as I'm aware, with the way the Aviva works and also to be an international break in November, you'd probably be looking at starting the season a few weeks earlier. I'm still not sure how you get away at this time of the year. Maybe you do then have to decide third qualifying round, fourth qualifying round, you can get a bye week there if you want it. But again, Stephen Kenny was saying he wanted the bye week last week. He would have loved to have had a break between, you know, coming back from their game and then having to play Besiktas, where Stephen Bradley was saying, we want the more games, the better. And, you know, Stephen Kenny's pointing out they're 10 points clear at the top. They've got by far and away the most depth. You know, of course they're happy to keep on playing. So I think they should extend the league just to get it started that few weeks earlier and not have this mad rush maybe of the Monday night games between the European teams That means a lot of the big games have happened already earlier in the season. And again, I think they get a little bit lost on the Monday nights. You don't get as big a crowd generally on the Monday nights. And because it's the European teams, they're generally going to be the better team. So yeah, I'd like to see them extend the season, but get rid of some of those European clashes earlier in the year.
For sure. It is an unbelievably exciting time to be a football fan. Just to remind you and just to mark your card for this week, Shelburne against Rijeka tomorrow night is going to be live and off the ball. You've got the Super Cup on Wednesday between Paris Saint-Germain and Tottenham. We've got more live action on Thursday night and off the ball. It's going to be Shamrock Rovers against Balkany in the second leg of that one. Liverpool versus Bournemouth on Saturday night. A heap of fixtures on Saturday. And then Manchester United versus Arsenal with the dulcet tones of Nathan Murphy on Sunday afternoon. And then Monday night football as well. So
we've also got a Forest against Brentford.
Okay,
on Sunday. That's our first live game, 2 o'clock. Steve and Brian Kerr are going to be on that. And obviously we've got a vested interest in Brentford this season.
Well, that's the thing. We're going to do a slot before the week is out on the football show with our predictions for the week. I think we might actually have to put aside one specific section on Brentford. What will the outcome on the Keith Andrews era at Brentford actually be? Will there be an outcome this season? Maybe it'll be the first of many, many years of Keith Andrews taking them towards European football.
Hopefully.
Nathan, good stuff.
Thanks, all.
Chat to you soon. Take a quick break.
Football on Off the Ball
with William Hill. You can boost your winnings on every game with new Bet Builder Extra. Only with William Hill. Download the app today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.
All right, folks, get your finger out and pit your football knowledge against Team OTB to win big. There's €2,500 for the winner of the OTB Final One Standing League on the William Hill app. Guaranteed winner, and it's exclusive to our own league. Just sign up at William Hill Final One Standing. Use the code OFFTHEBALL, that's all one word and all caps, and make sure you sign up before Friday the 15th at 8 o'clock when the new season kicks off. €2,500 to the winner, guaranteed.